www.chaldeanews.com. Find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.
This is full-time Catholic radio for Southeast Michigan, 990 WDEO, Ypsilanti, Detroit, or on the internet at WDEO.net.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo.
Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Produced by Ave Maria Radio and broadcast through the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
What's the person to do? Everyday decisions that matter. Through the chat with our friend, Dr. Mark Latkovic, again, who's been on my show many times, and he's a professor of moral and systematic theology at Sacred Heart Major Seminary in Detroit. Yay! He was just over there doing a two-hour broadcast the other day and had a blast. He's also the author of numerous articles, essays, and other writings on moral theology, and he is known, of course, as you know, a speaker, a panelist, also a consultant to many church officials, and he and his beautiful wife, Christine, have four children and live in Michigan. Hey, Mark, sorry we missed you at the seminary the other day. Were you in class at the time when we were there live?
Yeah, I think so. I had class in the morning and then again in the evening, so it's kind of a long day. So,
yeah, well, it was good to be there. You guys are doing great work at the seminary, and I was talking about you. I don't know if your ears were ringing, but I was saying that we have such a gift at the seminary with so many great folks who are engaging the culture like yourself. So tell us about this book. What led you to writing this? Because I think it's a great idea. There are so many issues that we may think are smaller that we don't have to worry about too much, but that if we don't respond correctly to them from a Christian perspective, they could eat away at us spiritually, don't you think?
You're absolutely right. Actually, I was approached to write this book by our Sunday Visitor Press, and they had asked me if I would write it. They were looking for someone that could sort of popularize the Catholic moral theology, our philosophical ethics, and put it in a format that would be accessible to people, that the average person in the pew could pick it up. They wouldn't need any background in moral theology or anything like that. And it would just be very accessible, a piece of work that would be popular but not watered down in any way. And so this was maybe a year and a half ago or so they approached me, and they were thinking like a Q&A book. And so we have 40 questions and my responses, my answers in the book. And as you said, they're everyday questions. They're not the kind of questions that rise to the level of taking human life or creating human life in the laboratory. Occasionally those kinds of issues are just mentioned indirectly in the book or incidentally when I'm using examples and things like that. But the focus of the book is really just these everyday questions. Can I attend a movie that is R-rated? It might have violence and sexual content. Can I read a book? Can I read a book that has morally objectionable content? What about Facebook, social media? All those kinds of just everyday questions, and that's really the subtitle of the book, you know, Everyday Decisions That Matter.
These issues are just so spot on. Well, the first question in the book, should our family have cable TV and internet access in our home? But what I'm looking at, and this is because I'm talking about this a lot, and especially as it relates to women and pornography, is number four. Can I read a book or attend a play or watch a movie with risque parts? And you start out by talking about 50 Shades of Grey.
That's right. I haven't read 50 Shades of Grey, and I have no intention on reading it, but just from what I've gathered, you know, about it, it's really pornography geared towards women.
Hardcore it's pornography,
yes,
and submission,
yes,
and domination, and
exactly,
sadomasochism. Let's just be direct about this here.
Yes.
Okay? Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. And, boy, I'm glad you did this, because so many people are saying it's okay, no pun intended, but they're saying, oh, it's a gray area, and it's no big deal. And it is
That's a big deal.
Because what you start talking about in this chapter is understanding what's at stake here. For example, you also mentioned the movie Magic Mike, and you talk about 50 Shades of Grey. This is real stuff that's infiltrating our homes and many, many Catholic homes, because people are thinking it's nothing more than a movie or a book. But if they go to the Catechism and see what the Catechism says about pornography and why it's sinful, it goes back to the basic teachings of the Church about the dignity of the human person and the sacredness of the marital act. And when you are reading something like this, a lot of people think it's innocent because they're reading it versus watching it.
That's right.
And I think that's where a lot of the problems come in.
Well, you know, you're absolutely right again. One of the other reasons why I included questions like that in the book was because oftentimes in recent years, with the explosion of the Internet and social media and so on, I was encountering people, good Catholics. I was encountering priests, good men, who were under the understanding that somehow pornography or movies like this, you know, that are on the borderline, could be okay as long as they stay within marriage. And I was saying, gee, did I teach you moral theology? Or you must have studied somewhere else, because they wouldn't have gotten that for me. And so I was hearing really good people say, well, you know, it's okay. It's all right as long as it's not, you know, something that, you know, you're going to some seedy movie theater, you know, it's within your home and the bedroom and all of that. And I was saying, no. So in the back of my mind, as I was formulating all these questions, not just questions having to do with pornography and social media and so on, I was thinking of my fellow Catholics who may be really seriously misinformed about what is morally upright and what is not in this area.
So did you collaborate with OSV on the questions, or are these some of the things that you thought would be appropriate based on your work as a professor of theology?
When they approached me, my editor, Sydney Kavner, she said, you know, this is the kind of book we're looking for, and she mentioned, you know, it's maybe three or four questions, and some of those got incorporated into the book in one form or another with, you know, some tweaking. But they were probably 95% of the questions were mine. I just sat down, I think it was like the day after they approached me, and I agreed to do it and came up with the questions. They were questions just from my own experience of being a married father of four, teaching, talking in parishes, conferences, you know, men's groups, you know, close to 30 years, as I say in the beginning of the book. These questions have just been floating around, you know, and so there could have been many more. I have actually a list of about 20 now. We have a Facebook page, I should mention, for the book. So if your listeners are interested, they can go on Facebook, and it's What's a Person to Do? And they can engage me with questions that weren't in the book or questions that are in the book.
Oh, cool.
And, so it's very interactive, and we try to post things a few times a week, whether it's, you know, hey, I'm going to be on your radio show today, or I'm speaking somewhere, I'm giving away books, you know, or a book signing, that kind of thing. So I would encourage the listeners, you know, if they're interested in knowing more about the book and just this topic in general, you know, these everyday moral decisions that matter.
So the website for that again, Mark, is?
It's What's a Person to Do.
It's on Facebook. Okay, got it.
Yes.
Facebook page.
Yeah.
All right, good. Now, in terms of people thinking through things, I think that's something that we've lost, the art of actually the thinking process. For example, we had a gentleman call in the other day, and I was actually so intrigued by his comments, and I'm writing my Eye on Culture column for OSV. I'll be submitting it on Monday, but I just found it so interesting and so typical of the lack of thought process that goes on, with all due respect to the caller. A gentleman called in on Tuesday when I was on with Dr. Miller, and Dr. Miller and I were discussing the use of photographs of the aborted babies in terms of pro-life work, you know, the pros and cons, and they had a meeting about that, so we're talking. And a gentleman calls up from Ohio. He was very nice. He wasn't rude. But he was very, as a matter of fact, about the abortion issue and said, we're never going to end it, so we should just have it in clean places, as long as it's clean and done in a hospital. And, of course, we both reacted to that strongly, saying, well, wait a minute. Let's take that thought process further. Then why have laws about anything? Because evil is going to exist until, you know, God comes again, until the second coming of Christ. So let's just let everything go because we can't stop it.
Right.
That is, that not being able to think that through, they would never say that about drug addiction. They would never say that about rape. They would never say that about domestic violence or child abuse. Well, they're going to do it anyway. So as long as they do it in an area where it doesn't affect them. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
To stop
mm-hmm.
and think that through, people don't seem to do that anymore.
That's right. Just like with your question about, you know, why are women letting themselves be treated like this, I think, same thing with this area. There's many different factors. I think many times in our society, we reduce everything to rights, as you know. And so that was another topic we were talking about back in May when I was on. And so we don't deliberate. We don't go through the process of reasoning in a practical way about what is best, what is virtuous, what is holy. We just go right to, well, a woman has a right to choose, or so-and-so has a right to do this or do that. They have a right to a child. And we don't really think about the anthropological, the theological, the philosophical reasoning that's involved there. What kind of life are we taking? We're taking human life, you know? What kind of right is this? It's a right to kill another human being. We don't think about those things. We go right to the conclusion, so to speak, and say there's a right to that. Because society or the courts or somebody has said we have a right to that. I saw the other day on Facebook, actually it was one of my students told me about this, that the Tigers organization on their Facebook page was encouraging everyone to wear purple last night in honor of LGBT night, the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transsexual movement. And here again, we have a cultural phenomenon, where this is being accepted, this is being promoted by the Tigers, What could be more, wonderful than the Detroit Tigers,
Right.
How could this be wrong? They're promoting it. What's wrong with it?
America's favorite pastime, baseball. They're encouraging us to encourage this lifestyle.
It's not
right.
An apple pie, wear your purple. No big deal, Let's put this in a hospital. Let's, it's nice and tidy. But, to go back to the example with the gentleman, killing is killing. You can clean it up. You can be bloodless. It can be, under anesthesia. But the person still loses their life. They still lose their life. A fundamental good has been taken, has been eliminated. Someone's life.
But the fact that people can't think that way tells me that they have been so desensitized by our culture. Even if they're going to church, as this man was obviously listening to Catholic radio, and I don't know if he's a regular listener, never heard from him before, but again, he sounded like he listened. I did. The tone of his voice seemed to think that he was familiar with us and familiar with the conversation we were having.
But
to me, it's amazing to me, but again, it's a reminder that the people sitting next to us, even in the pews, need to have a better understanding of these issues and how
definitely.
The Catholic faith has to be with us every single day, or as I like to say, a 24/7 Catholic.
Yes. Definitely, that's a great way of putting it. It's almost as if the secular culture has rewired people's thinking. The circuitry now is short circuiting because there's so many influences that are alien to the gospel that are, as you said at the beginning of the program, penetrating the hearts and minds of Catholics, of Catholic families, and they're second guessing themselves. They were raised with the Ten Commandments, with the virtues and so on, but, their best friend or a good coworker who they know is, in favor of so-called abortion rights or is leading an active homosexual lifestyle. So, I know they're good people. So how could that be wrong? So they start to second guess. And maybe that's true with the gentleman, caller on your show the other day. After 30, 40 years, it's almost like they feel beat down and they think, I know good people who hold this view. I don't really think it could be all that bad, as long as we tidy it up and, nobody gets hurt and, it must be okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's not okay. It's not. And so Catholics they take on this sort of blasé kind of, let's let bygones be bygones. Let's just agree to disagree and they just want to give up the good fight, It's almost as if they're tired, but many of them haven't really started fighting the battle to begin with,
I wish they could if they could just go back to see what the church says about these things, which I'm so glad is in this book, because the church, and even if the church specifically doesn't say, let's say in a particular teaching about the internet or about a particular book, it does give us an understanding of the dignity of the human person, of where sexuality belongs, the relationship between male and female, and we should be able to, with the Holy Spirit, conclude and deduct from these different situations what's right and what's wrong. Thanks, Mark. Appreciate you and the book, What's a Person to Do? Everyday Decisions That Matter, by our friend Dr. Mark Lakovic from Sacred Heart Major Seminary.
This program is brought to you in part by the generous support of Ciena Communications. Ciena introduces a plan to give you a mobile phone with no contract required. There are no hidden fees, and with Ciena, using your mobile phone helps the culture of life in America with no additional cost or effort from you. Everyday mobile phone living becomes effortless giving. More information can be found at ProLifeCatholic.com. That's ProLifeCatholic.com. Charity begins at phone.
People ask me how they can care for older family members who can't fully care for themselves. I've been telling my friends about Visiting Angels, America's Choice in Senior Home Care. They're the angels who can help. Visiting Angels assists adults nationwide to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Their caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meals, and light housework. Services are provided up to 24 hours per day, and you may select your caregiver before service begins. For more information, including franchise opportunities, visit them online at visitingangels.com.
Hi, I'm Al Creston. Have you heard the news? You can have a major impact in Africa by establishing a Sacred Mercy scholarship to benefit poor children in Kenya. The cost? Just $110. It launches the scholarship and places a needy child in school for a full year. Create a legacy of hope. Rescue a child from illiteracy. Empower Catholic schools in Africa. To take part, just call Cross Catholic Outreach at 888-766-2426. That's 888-766-2426.
Light of the East. Weekends on Ave Maria Radio.
I am Father Thomas Loya. This week on Light of the East on Ave Maria, the evening prayer of the Byzantine Church called the Vespers service is an ancient prayer of light, liturgically immersing us into the entire rhythm of salvation history.
Saturdays at 7:30 p.m. and Sunday mornings at 7 on 990 WDEO.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Catholic Connection with Teresa Tamio.
Last time I saw Monsignor, actually it's the first time I unofficially met him, when he was at the audience of Benedict. This was back in December. Do you remember Monsignor Morris?
I do.
I was waving to you, and
yes,
Ginger was introducing,
the
there's Monsignor Morris, there's Teresa Tamio, and we were like waving to each other across. But you had a whole group from your now hometown, Columbus.
That's correct.
And many of the seminarians from the Josephinum, a wonderful pontifical college there where you are employed now as a wonderful instructor. All right, so... It can be very challenging for us, because our Holy Father has a very different style, and he is shaking things up. He says he wants to make a mess, but a good mess, not a bad mess, but a good mess, in terms of get people thinking. You know, Jesus came to comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable, so I think our Holy Father is doing a very good job of that. Some of the stories, though, that have come out of Rome when they are given to the secular media are greatly taken out of context and can confuse a lot of people. So what should be our approach? Since obviously this is something new, we're all kind of growing with our Holy Father and his new style.
Well, I mean, I think the first thing we all have to do, and this would be true of really anything, and the Church has been encouraging this, you know, since the conciliar period, and that is that we read the information that's there. Again, certainly in translation, and of course, anytime you're dealing with translation, you're always going to deal with, you know, the choices of the particular translator, but there are some good agencies, obviously, that we can trust. And certainly the Vatican News Agency itself and its translation that it provides. ZNet is another one that provides an accurate translation. If you know Latin or Italian, of course, that's going to be even more helpful, because you can obviously read it then particularly in the Italian, in the original language in which he's speaking it, unless it's in Spanish. You know, and if you know Spanish, again. So first of all, is to read it yourself. And then, you know, one of the things, and I've been talking about this with some of my students in light of the celebrations connected to the Second Vatican Council, which we'll be doing over, you know, the next couple of years, is, you know, the fact that the kind of the overall hermeneutic in all of this is really the traditions of the Church. You know, no one in the Church really can truly speak in a vacuum. And it may seem as such, and certainly the media, the secular media especially, will latch onto certain things and try to take them out of their particular context. But we read them in the context and in the light of tradition itself. And so some of the exhortations that our Holy Father Francis has been giving us in terms of how we live our faith are consistent, maybe not in the language that's used or maybe even in the way that they're presented, but nevertheless are consistent when you read the full text with what our Holy Father Benedict was enjoining us to do, and certainly, you know, the whole pontificate of Blessed John Paul II, this intimate encounter with our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, and how that should be transformative of our hearts and our lives, that then truly vivifies what it is that we do, you know, both in our celebration and our service and the manner in which we live our lives. So it's one, reading it first. Don't let somebody else tell you what it says. And again, it still boggles my mind that, actually, I was with a group of people on Sunday evening and asked them how many had read, you know, Sacrosanctum Concilium from the Second Vatican Council. And none of the 10 people present had read it. but yet they all could quote bits and pieces from it. So you got to read the, you got to read it first, mm-hmm. and then also allow the tradition and the history of the church to inform what is actually being said, which also then means we need to personally know what it is that we have always believed. We have to have access and awareness of that as well.
Well, yeah. For example, on one of the stories that my producer and I were discussing in preparation for our interview this morning, Monsignor, this is from Rome Reports, which is another good source, by the way.
Yes, it is.
Check it out, RomeReports.com. In his daily morning mass, and this is from October 17th, so last week, Pope Francis talked about Christians who turn their faith into an ideology. He explained this makes people hostile and arrogant and pushes them away from their peers. The root of such behavior, the Pope said, is a lack of prayer. The faith becomes ideology, and ideology frightens people and chases people away. It creates distances between people, and it distances the church and the people, but is a serious illness, this Christian ideology. He also added there's a difference between praying and simply saying prayers. People get carried away by ideology do not pray, rather they repeat memorized prayers. Well, that's nothing new than what we see in Scripture and also what we see in the teaching of the church, but if you just hear that off the cuff, you know, and you're just driving by or you're just looking at a headline, you may think that the Holy Father is saying that having a Christian type of ideology is wrong, but that's not what he's saying.
Correct. And again, you know, therein lies at some point some of the difficulty is, and I think our Holy Father may be aware of this himself, of, you know, and he will obviously grow into the office and need to maybe be a little bit more particular and precise in his own language, his own explanation of things as well, because you're right. If you're just simply reading this or, you know, someone presents this to you, this is what the Holy Father said, without really understanding the context, it's a little bit jarring. I mean, I've read it myself, and I'll confess, I'm still not quite sure what he means when he says an ideology as opposed to the Christian faith itself, you know, what distinctions he's drawing. Again, if I appeal to tradition, I can understand where, you know, the church has been made very clear that, you know, people have become ossified in particular positions in understanding the faith or living it out that might lead them to ideological ways of describing it. And as, again, certainly, you know, repeating prayers without understanding what they mean or how they're supposed to be transformative is not actually what we mean by praying. That's not good conversation with God. And so, again, in order for me to understand more deeply what it is that he's trying to say, I do need to have an appeal to the tradition. What has been said that is, in a sense, similar to this, or maybe, you know, even exactly like this, maybe not, again, with the precise words, but, again, providing a context. But you're right. It is. It can be confusing. It can be jarring, you know, and for the very faithful, for those then who are really looking for any kind of chink in the armor of the church, which, of course, under both Blessed John Paul II and Benedict XVI, the media, especially secular media, was really kind of eager to find any inconsistencies. These particular comments, in context and out of context, unfortunately, you know, become things that people latch on to that allows them to take them really in any direction they wish to go.
Right. The media seem to be having even more of a field day with our current Pope than they did
yes.
even with Benedict, don't you
yes.
think?
I agree wholeheartedly, because there isn't, you know, I was in Rome this summer again, fortunately, and the crowds that are there just, I mean, they're humongous. People are flocking to him, and I'm not sure that the crowds are larger than they were for Benedict, but, I mean, it seemed that way to me, but again, I'm not counting people, but there were certainly among kind of just the normal average person in Rome, cab drivers and people I would talk with, who said, yes, I mean, there are a lot of, you know, pilgrims coming in the city, so there's a legitimate energy and enthusiasm, obviously because this is a departure, you know, from, you know, even John Paul II and Benedict, who were both European. We now have some from South America. We have a Pope who wasn't present at the Council. And so there are a lot of firsts here that generate a certain degree of energy and enthusiasm, on top of which we have his particular comments, his way of proceeding almost from the very, actually not from the very first moment he appeared on the balcony until now. It's obviously clear it's not business as usual, and we're anticipating what's going to come out with the Super 8 Cardinals. So there's a lot of good kind of energy surrounding this, and so you can see where the media is energetic. But again, I think also what motivates it is, you know, this anticipation, now finally we have someone who's going to be departing from, you know, the basic truths of the faith, and that's where the confusion then, I think, for maybe the average Catholic who may not be that steeped in his faith would think, maybe that's true. Maybe, you know, this Holy Father can depart from the basic teachings of the faith, which obviously he cannot. That's an impossibility. That's not how we work. That's not how we roll here. So, you know, it's not going to happen. If he says things that are misinterpreted that way, that's a sadness, and we have to correct that or better explain it, but it can never be that way.
All right, let's open up the phone lines if you have a question for Monsignor Morris, 877-573-7825. So are you getting a lot of questions from your students at the seminary, Monsignor, about this?
You know, yes and no. You know, the beautiful thing about the seminarians, and I think this is true across the board, they're a lot more, I won't say sophisticated necessarily, I don't want to use that word because it's overused, but they're savvy. They're tweeting and blogging and reading, and so they kind of understand this. I think some of them are a little bit confused as to what they might do with this. You know, again, and I think especially the confusion or maybe the frustration, maybe how they're going to explain this to the lay faithful. They're involved in parishes either here or at home. So, but not questions in terms of, you know, this doesn't make sense to me. I think they understand how to interpret this, how to deal with it. I think their struggle is how might they then encounter the lay faithful and help them better understand it.
He is challenging us to express it differently, express our faith differently, isn't he?
Yes, he is. But, you know, and again, having gone back in preparation for the celebration of the 50th anniversary of the Council, John the 23rd was doing the exact same thing. You know, was asking us to do that. So, you know, we're still in that kind of that consistent reality. And again, the tradition, the history of the church provides the context for us.
All right, more conversation with Monsignor Eugene Morris about understanding our Holy Father and kind of adjusting to his new way of doing things. Is a very direct and open approach. 877-573-7825. It's a different style, very off the cuff. And how do we react to that? Something we're not used to, that's for sure.
Mother and Unborn Baby Care is hosting their Monte Carlo night on Friday, November 8th at the Farmington Hills Manor. This fun event features blackjack and live and silent auctions. Two separate dinner parties are live auction prizes. One dinner party is with Father John Ricardo, host of Christ is the Answer. The other is with Monsignor John Zenz. Mother and Unborn Baby Care is currently accepting pre-auction bids for these two dinner parties. Call Peter Ricardo to place a bid at 248-202-4903. The website is maubc.org.
America's most effective Catholic apologists are urging us to read Al Cresta's Dangers to the Faith, Catholicism's 21st Century Opponents. Patrick Madrid says,
Dangers to the Faith is a serious, substantive, significant work of cultural apologetics.
Steve Ray says,
Cresta exposes Catholicism's enemies and gives us a clear plan of action. Study it as a torch to light the way into a new century.
Carl Keating added,
Dangers to the Faith points toward the one thing that will bring real fulfillment to everyone who seeks it. The Catholic faith.
Jimmy Akin.
Al Cresta is one of the most insightful and intelligent commentators on the Catholic scene. Dangers to the Faith exposes the sources of confusion and demolishes them one by one.
Patrick Coffin.
Cresta has a preternatural knack for dissecting headlines and exposing the story behind the story. Dangers to the Faith is a clear look at the big isms that have screwed up the world and tainted the church.
Al Cresta's Danger to the Faith at your local Catholic bookstore, wherever books are sold, or at AveMariaRadio.net. Today's programming on 990 WDEO is made possible in part from our day sponsor. To invoke the intercession of all the saints for His Holiness Pope Francis, that love, joy, and peace of the Holy Spirit may rest upon him.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo.
Chatting with Monsignor Eugene Morris. The stories continue to come out from Rome. Of course, the Holy Father will make a statement, and he'll say it a little bit differently or a little bit more in a relaxed format, and the media will take it thinking that the church has totally changed on major doctrine, which just can't happen, as Monsignor said. Truth does not change. We can learn more about a particular truth, whether it be the male priesthood, whether it be the baby in the womb, but the truth does not change because truth is given to us from God. So, 877-573-7825. How do we deal with this? What do we do with this? How do we explain what our Holy Father really means to those in the pews and those with whom we come in contact who have questions about the faith and want to say, see, told you the church is going to change on this, that, or the other thing? Well, that's why we have Monsignor Eugene Morris, and that's why we continue the conversation, which is what we do at Catholic Radio. Let's go to the phones. We have Julio from Dallas, Texas, on line 2. Good morning. What's your question or comment?
Well, hi, Theresa. And how, Monsignor?
Good morning, Odell.
Well, the thing is that I've been praying a little bit about the Pope and you know, what he's coming out. And, you know, coming from John Paul II and Pope Benedict, you know, John Paul II taught us what we need to do. And then Benedict XVI told us why we need to do what Pope John Paul II said we have to do. And then Pope Francis is basically, let's do it. I got what this two big guys said, let's do it. And the media obviously don't know how to react when there's a Pope that is not precisely preaching per se. It's more of let's do it instead of just, you know, just being out there preaching and saying the truth. The truth has been spoken for many, many years, and now we have someone who is really wanting to show everyone how to get closer to Jesus.
You know, Julia, I appreciate that, and I think that in one sense is a beautiful analysis of, you know, these three pontificates, the insights from John Paul, Benedict, and now our Holy Father Francis. The only caveat I would add to that then is really then at this particular juncture, especially given all the energy that's been generated around these recent conversations and interviews, is for him to kind of just simply be quiet and then do it. I mean, that really is the exhortation that he's providing for us. The best manifestation of that would be the manner in which he's then going to comport himself in his pontificate, and that would be, you know, less speaking and, you know, in a sense, more doing, and maybe just simply saying that. You know, we have the teachings of John Paul II. We have the theological underpinnings of Benedict XVI. We have all that we need, you know, in terms of a really, really good philosophy, a good theology. Now, brothers and sisters, it's time for us to, you know, as we move into the new millennium to really live that and not provide, in a sense, and again, this is the difficulty, is because now where we find ourselves, instead of actually being able to really hear that message and put that into practice, we're spending time, you know, trying to understand,
like we are
how we
today.
Exactly. And again, this is an extremely valuable, and I agree with Teresa totally, we need to continue the conversation, the dialogue. But I actually, and I think Teresa, you would agree with me, I would much rather be having the conversation about how the variety of ways we might implement this, as opposed to, in
explain
a sense, maybe taking a step
right.
Exactly,
mm-hmm.
having to explain
mm-hmm.
that this is what he actually means.
Right.
So
appreciate it, Julio. Thanks so much. We have other calls. Let's go to Bill from New Jersey on line one. Hi, Bill. Good morning.
Oh, hi, Teresa. Hi, Monsignor.
Good morning, Bill.
Thanks. Good morning. I just have a question or a comment. I mean, no one wants to be the older brother in the prodigal son parable. And I understand and I hear that from the Holy Father. But for many of us, I mean, I grew up in the 70s in a Catholic family that was devout and intelligent and, you know, fully participated in the faith before we were invited to fully participate in the faith, I suppose. And through the 70s, through the 80s, you know, a lot of people went through a lot of agony who were faithful Catholics, watching kind of a wave of madness kind of cascade over the mm-hmm. church. And we've all worked very hard, I think, and me as a father with four kids who I'm trying to bring up in the faith in a very complicated world, have worked very hard to preserve our Catholic faith and our cultural identity in the face of a lot of craziness. And this last talk by the Holy Father, where he's kind of going after the people with the Christian ideology, I have to admit that I feel a little kind of, you know, kicked in the gut by that. That it's, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of us have spent our lives trying to prevent the decay and erosion of the Catholic world that, you know, quite frankly, we used to love. You know, we weren't the victims of abusive priests. We weren't yelled at and beaten by nuns. We actually loved the church before the council, and we loved it after. And a lot of us are kind of feeling like we're being painted as a bad guy by the Holy Father. Maybe that's not accurate, but I just wanted to voice that emotion and kind of get your reaction to maybe where I'm off base here.
No, I think that's a great point. I know that I've received a lot of emails about that, but Monsignor, go ahead if you want to react.
No,
to
I would actually have to concur with that. You know, it's you know, they say in politics he's kind of, you know, undercutting his base. You know, we're the ones that have, as Bill says beautifully, have, you know, striven to remain faithful and to live that faith with joy, you know, in the midst of, you know, difficulties before, during, and after the council and in light of the current issues. And then we hear these things again that, you know, again, can be properly contextualized, but given that we have to go through that kind of matrix first, coupled with what we're hearing from the media as it misinterprets, it does feel as if times, what do you mean by that? How, you know, is that directed toward me? because I've remained steadfast. I've remained, you know, strong, not in my principles only, but in my adherence to what the church herself teaches. So this isn't just a question of me and what I think. It's a question, actually, of what the church teaches and my fidelity to that, my assent to that, my humility in that regard. So, again, this does kind of, I think Bill's, I appreciate him actually voicing it because I think it needs to be part of this conversation. It's not polemical to simply say that some of the comments themselves and the manner in which they're both given and possibly interpreted have been and can be a cause of pain and confusion for those who really have striven, you know, personally and then to pass it as he's doing on Bill, you're doing it with your children and your family have, you know, have really worked to pass that on to others as well. It can be jarring and hurtful to hear these things.
Well, and I also think what the Holy Father is trying to do, but again, here we are trying to figure it out versus applying it. As you said, Monsignor, I think he's very frustrated with the hierarchy in the church in terms of what hasn't happened, and he sees the many problems in the Vatican, and he's had it with that, which is a good thing because there are issues that need to be addressed and things that need to be done and cleaned up and whatnot. And so I think this is how I'm interpreting it, because we see what he teaches and what he's done in terms of standing up for marriage when he was in Argentina and of course, his efforts in pro-life and whatnot. But again, it can be jarring, and we have to remember, and I still think, Monsignor, this is, again, personal opinion. We're allowed to talk about this because we're Catholic and we can have, you know, respectful discussion. I still don't think that many in the Vatican realize that, as Marshall McLuhan, who, by the way, was a Catholic convert, said, the medium is often the message, or the medium is the message.
Yes, it is, along with personnel makes policy. So,
exactly.
You know, I agree wholeheartedly. I really do.
And I think the church has to do a better job of realizing this, that you can't just put it out there and then expect everybody to understand it and say, oh, we all have to adjust. This is the age in which we are living.
Correct.
You know, and so we have to understand how that works, and in order to help the church and to help people like Bill and their families who've remained faithful and have done whatever they can to support the church. So, I want to keep talking about it, and I think it's an important conversation. But I'm glad to hear you say that we need. How should we summarize this, Monsignor? What do you think? I'm at a loss for words here.
I think you're actually. I mean, you're right on target. We need to be aware of the world in which we live, and really stop it kind of an imperiousism that allows us simply to say whatever we want to say. We need to be precise and articulate in moving people forward in order really truly to support our faithful Catholic.
All right, Monsignor, thanks so much. Monsignor, of course, with the Pontifical College Josephinum in Columbus. Up next, we'll talk about religious freedom issues with our friends at the Thomas More Law Center. Stay tuned on a Tuesday.
The following is a message brought to you by the Catholic Biblical School of Michigan.
In his gospel, John treats faith as a verb, an action that must be taken. And Jesus continuously invites people into this action. He suggests to the Samaritan woman, "Give me a drink." And when she responds, her life is forever changed. He invites some of John's disciples to come and see where he lives. They do and invite others, and thus is formed the core of Jesus' mission team. He asks a friend, "Why are you weeping?" And a sick man, "Do you want to be healed?" These questions invite an interior vulnerability, a deeper type of faith-filled response. And Jesus always extends such invitations to us. Let us pray that we may respond in faith, letting Him lead us into deeper relationship with Him and an abundant life in His love. This message is brought to you by the Catholic Biblical School of Michigan.
Alliance Catholic Credit Union is proud to offer a unique tuition loan program to help Catholic families provide their children with a quality Catholic education. We're here to help. Visit any one of our 9 Alliance Catholic Credit Union branches or call 877-950-2228. ACCU is federally insured by the NCUA. APR refers to annual percentage rate determined by creditworthiness of borrower. Some restrictions may apply. See website and Facebook page for more details. AllianceCCU.com.
The choir and orchestra of historic Assumption Grotto Church invite you to a commemoration of All Souls Day, presenting the Mozart Requiem in a solemn traditional Latin Mass. Don't miss this rare opportunity to experience the Mozart Requiem on All Souls Day, Saturday, November 2nd at 9:30 a.m. Assumption Grotto is located on Gratiot Avenue, just north of McNichols in Detroit. For additional information, go to AssumptionGrotto.com. That's AssumptionGrotto.com.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Catholic Connection with Teresa Tamio.
Welcome back, Catholic Connections. Always great to have the folks from the Thomas More Law Center on with us. They're based in Ann Arbor, Michigan, actually right in our building. They do great work around the country to defend the faith in the public square. Aaron Rossino is on the phone with us. Aaron, this is really an interesting story, that there were other Christians who were allowed to continue their services during the shutdown. So what happened? Why was one Catholic priest not allowed to hold religious services at his naval base? Let's talk about that. Let's get the background on the story, first of all. Good morning.
Good morning. Well, first off, the largest number of servicemen are Catholic. So 25% of the service are Catholic, but there's a shortage of Catholic priests. So in order to rectify this situation with the military chaplains, many of the Catholic priests are contract employees with the Department of Defense. And during the shutdown, the Pay Our Military Act, they interpreted that act to not include contract employees. So across the country, while other faiths were allowed to continue practicing and continue celebrating their services, Catholics were not allowed to celebrate Mass because contract employees were furloughed.
So do you think this is a deliberate targeting of Catholics?
You know, when you have signs that have been typed up and put up on the chapel, and this is a chapel that's used by different denominations, and the chapel says, Protestants can celebrate here. However, during the time of government shutdown, there will be no Catholic services. It does seem pretty targeted.
And so what happened? What did you do?
What we did is we filed a lawsuit because we believe that this was an egregious violation of constitutional rights and our religious freedom. And in reaction to us filing this lawsuit, we were preparing a temporary restraining order to file as soon as possible with the court. The very next day after we filed this lawsuit, the Department of Justice, who represents the Department of Defense and the Department of the Navy, called us and said Father Leonard can go back to work.
Now, Father Leonard was also threatened with arrest, wasn't he?
He was. There's something, it's an older law from 1870 that says during the time of government shutdown, if someone goes back to work on a voluntary basis, then that person is subject to arrest. They can be imprisoned up to 2 years and fined up to $5,000. And the chaplain's staff told him when he said that he wanted to simply celebrate Mass for free during the time of government shutdown, they said, if you do, then you will be arrested.
Okay, but once you file the lawsuit, they all of a sudden said, oh, okay, I guess you can go ahead and resume your religious duties.
Yes, they completely capitulated.
So what kind of a message do you think that that sent to you and the Thomas More Law Center? I mean, this is why we need to do these kinds of things, to stand up for our faith. It's amazing that we have to go this route, but apparently every once in a while it does work.
It is amazing because Father Leonard, for the past 10 years prior to becoming a military chaplain, he had been in China, and he had been working with the Tibetans and helping the poor in China. And there in China, you can't simply go out and practice your faith in the public square. And he couldn't believe his freedom was being restricted when he came back to the United States in this fashion, where if he did that, then he would be subject to arrest. It's simply outrageous. And I think by us bringing this to light and by filing the lawsuit, the Department of Justice realized just how ridiculous this really was and how unnecessary it was.
How much coverage outside of Catholic and other Christian media and conservative talk radio did this get?
It got some coverage on Fox News. Of course, it's a conservative outlet. But mainly it's been restricted to our Catholic media outlets.
But see, this to me is what's so frustrating, Aaron, because these types of things happen, and you know this because you've worked on other cases, a lot of different cases with Dick Thompson and the gang at the Thomas More Law Center. It's happening over and over again, and if people don't hear about it, if they're not aware, then they become desensitized to just how bad it is, especially for Catholics.
I completely agree. I think just, we got the picture of the sign. The Knights of Columbus took it for us from the chapel. And that picture, I think, should have been on the front page of every newspaper. It said, Protestant services will continue. Catholic services are canceled during government shutdown. And it just shows just how grossly unfair this is and how wrong it was. It's amazing to think that an employee sat down and typed out that sign and thought, okay, this is going to be all right. We're going to completely violate someone's right to religious freedom and not someone else's. That's going to be okay.
Oh, did they explain their reasoning, if you could even call it that? I mean, once you challenge them, or they just reverse the decision? And do you have any discussions or what happened in that process?
No, they reversed the decision and they asked us to dismiss our lawsuit. We're not going to dismiss it because the law that forced this violation of religious freedom is still on the books, and it could still happen again if we have a government shutdown again. And we want to make sure that this does not happen ever again to another Catholic priest who simply wants to celebrate Mass for free to people who need it most, our servicemen. Father Leonard was telling me how servicemen have increased rates of suicide, divorce, and he truly feels the need to help these people and service these individuals, and not being able to do that was devastating for him.
It's this, as you said, with his experience just coming back from China, and this is happening in the United States of America, land of the free, home of the brave. We're supposed to have religious freedom. Our constitutional rights are being violated every single day. And my fear and the pain in my heart, Aaron, is that so many people are not aware of what's going on because they're not getting their news from us. They're getting it from the secular media, and they're not aware. And I feel like one day we're going to wake up and everything is going to be taken from us.
I fear that, too. I would ask people to go to the Thomas More website, Thomas More spelled like the saint.org, and see all of the different cases that we're handling, because I was not completely aware of this before I started working with the Law Center, and we are just bombarded with cases where people's religious freedom are violated by the government, and it's shocking.
All right, let's take a quick break.
It's happening.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, absolutely. Sorry, I didn't mean to step on you. It's Erin Mercino,
oh, no,
and she is with the Thomas More Law Center, a wonderful, dynamic young attorney. 877-573-7825, thomasmore.org. Again, thomasmore.org, as Erin said. It's after St. Thomas More, of course, the great martyr, M-O-R-E. They're based in Ann Arbor, and they do amazing work standing up for the faith. 877-573-7825. We'll be right back to wrap up with attorney Aaron Mercino.
The stock market.
The world economy.
Interest rates.
Political change.
In a world full of uncertainty, you can find comfort that your investments are in line with your moral beliefs by investing with the Ave Maria Mutual Funds. Long-term investors should consider investing in the no-load Ave Maria Mutual Funds. Call toll-free 1-866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
The advisor invests in securities only if they meet the fund's investment and religious requirements, and as such, the return may be lower or higher than if the advisor made decisions based solely on the investment considerations. The fund's method of security selection may or may not be successful, and the fund may underperform or outperform the stock market as a whole. All mutual funds are subject to market risk, including possible loss of principal. For a prospectus which includes objectives, risks, fees, charges, expenses, and other information that should be read and considered carefully before investing, call 1-866-AVE-MARIA. That's 1-866-283-6274 or visit AveMariaFunds.com. Distributed by Ultimus Fund Distributors, LLC.
People ask me how they can care for older family members who can't fully care for themselves. I've been telling my friends about Visiting Angels, America's Choice in Senior Home Care. They're the angels who can help. Visiting Angels assists adults nationwide to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Their caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meals, and light housework. Services are provided up to 24 hours per day, and you may select your caregiver before service begins. For more information, including franchise opportunities, visit them online at visitingangels.com.
At birth, you bring your children into the Catholic faith.
I baptize you in the name of the Father and of the Son.
You nurture their faith as they grow.
Prayer is about an encounter with a living God.
Unfortunately, many young adults lose their faith in a secular, anything-goes college culture. At Franciscan University of Steubenville, your child's college years will be a time to grow in the Catholic faith. With its 40 majors and vibrant Catholic culture, Franciscan University is academically challenging and passionately Catholic. Find out more at franciscan.edu.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Catholic Connection with Teresa Tamio.
Eight 877-573-7825. Chatting with attorney Erin Mercino from the Thomas More Law Center in Ann Arbor, Michigan. She's actually down in Texas right now handling yet another case of a violation of religious freedom. I do have some additional questions, and if you do too, feel free to call in as our guest Maureen from Indianapolis, our guest caller on line one. Hi, Maureen. What's your question for Erin? Good morning.
Hi, good morning, Erin. Thanks for taking that lawsuit. As a government attorney myself, I think it's very important that you're doing that. My question is this. You know, when you accept federal government money in a small way, you're almost selling your soul to the devil. Why is it that these Catholic priests are being paid by the government instead of by the church in the first place?
Well, the Catholic priests work for the military. They're military chaplains. And so they provide their services and celebrate Mass specifically for our service members.
Well, I understand that, but it seems to me that they wouldn't have to be paid by the government necessarily. I mean, if you're a Catholic priest, you don't work for the government. You work for the church, and it's your ministry and your calling. And I think, wouldn't we be able to avoid some of these problems if they didn't get entangled with becoming government, quote-unquote, employees?
Well, but if they're serving as military chaplains, I'll let Erin add to this, obviously, because she handled the case. But, Maureen, if they're serving as military chaplains, and they're going to be at chapels on military bases, and so I don't think what you're suggesting, and I understand your point, actually is even applicable in this case. If they're actually serving as military chaplains and have to go to the bases, these various locations to serve the military. Erin, am I off base here, or am I correct?
No, you're correct. There's actually a challenge a few years back from a couple of Harvard Law School graduates who wanted our government to stop paying for military chaplains, and the court said, no, our military have every right to have a military chaplain in their faith to help them, because our military, they have no choice about where they go, where they will be based, and they could be at a base that's very remote, and they will not have any sort of access to celebrate Mass or practice their religious freedom. So it's very important that we do have these military chaplains to help our servicemen. So I understand your point, but I think that there is a great need for Catholic priests and people to be able to practice their faith. It would be horrible to be stationed, you know, in Japan and have not a single place where you could go that would be near you or practical at all to practice your Catholic faith. So I think I understand your point, but this has been held up in court, and I think it's absolutely vital that we continue with the military chaplaincy program.
Isn't it more of a matter of location, Erin, in this case? Because even, let's say, to Maureen's point, if they were paid, let's say, by the diocese where they were, or by a local parish, if they were, you know, serving in a parish and went over to do a Mass at a military base, they still have to go on the government-run property. So that seems like it would be a moot point, you know what I'm saying, in terms of even if they weren't getting paid by the government, they'd still have to go to a government location, so it would still be shut down.
Yes, and in this case, the nearest Catholic church would have been an 8-mile walk for many of the sailors, because many of the sailors work on base, live on base, and don't have cars. And so round trip, it's a 16-mile walk that's simply undoable to walk there and back on a Sunday and be able, their schedules are highly regimented, and be able to actually make room for that in their schedules. So, and this is a base that's remote, but yet somewhat close to a neighboring town. But there's bases that are not at all close to a neighboring town, and so they would have no access to go into a town close by to be able to go to Mass. So it would be such an inconvenience, and it's a substantial burden, and it can't be allowed under the law.
Thanks, Maureen. Appreciate your phone call. Erin, we were chatting during the break, and you were saying that until you started to work for the Thomas More Law Center, you knew it was bad, but you just didn't know how bad, correct, in terms
yes,
of the attack
yes,
on the faith?
I didn't realize that we would be inundated with cases every day where something's happening to violate people's religious freedom. It's awful.
Wow.
But I think makes our work that much more important, and it certainly adds fuel to the fire to just keep working these cases as tough and as much as we can in order to make a difference.
Yeah, I think that goes, you know, without saying in all these areas, whether it's religious freedom, whether it's pro-life, whatever we do, we just have to keep on doing what we do because we know it's truth and we know what's right.
I agree.
You're amazing, and I know you're a very young woman and dynamic, and I know your in-laws, and fruit doesn't fall far from the tree. You come from a great family. Before we let you go, HHS mandate.
I love them.
I'll see him tonight at Legatus. I'll tell him you said hi. The HHS mandate, what's the latest with that, hon?
The latest with that is there's a circuit split. So we have Hobby Lobby was a case that's kind of been in the media more than maybe other cases, and that's in the 10th Circuit, and the government lost that case. The HHS mandate was ruled unconstitutional. The government could not force employers to provide abortifacients and contraceptives to their employees. And then we have another case in the 6th Circuit called the AutoCam case. And in that case, the court said, no, the government is allowed to come in and force employers at the threat of enormous penalties, millions of dollars a year, that they must supply contraceptives to their employees. So right now, because of the two divergent opinions, it's going to be before the Supreme Court, and the Solicitor General has asked for the Supreme Court to take up the Hobby Lobby case. But it looks like we will likely have a decision, I would say, by next summer. Mm. And the Thomas More Law Center, we're handling 10 HHS mandate lawsuits. So we are certainly in the charge to strike down the mandate, which wasn't a law that Congress passed. Congress left up to the Secretary of Health and Human Services to say what was included in the Affordable Care Act. And this one appointee, the one presidential appointee, says, okay, employers have to cover contraceptives and abortifacients and sterilization as well. And because this one individual says that all employers across the country have to cover it, then it's the law of the land as it stands now.
Yeah. Keep up the great work. Erin Messino from the Thomas More Law Center, thomasmore.org. Tomorrow, Peggy Hartshorn and Joan Lewis from Rome. See you then.
You've been listening to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tamio. Our producer is Andrew Krucek. For copies of this program or for more information, visit AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net. Thanks for listening and join us next time for another edition of Catholic Connection as Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness.
Would you like a copy of this program? If you miss a part of this program or want to hear it again, Ave Maria programming can be made yours when you order. Just call 734-930-4506. Within a few weeks, you'll receive a copy of this show and any others you want to order on CD. Call 734-930-4506.
Catholic Connection is brought to you in part by CatholicBusinessPages.com, your national and local online business directory, connecting Christian business professionals with Catholic consumers. Advertisers have taken a stand to support Christian family values in the marketplace. It's important to support businesses that embrace life and promote the gospel of Christ. And at CatholicBusinessPages.com, business professionals have taken that stand. CatholicBusinessPages.com, a great place to get connected.
Hello, this is Steve Ray. In conjunction with Ave Maria Radio, we've taken thousands of people to the Holy Land. We've followed the rosary sites and had Mass at all the special places. And now, since so many people want to go back for a new adventure, we have put together Holy Land Part 2, and we're going to be visiting all new sites. We're going to drink water from the well in Samaria, where Jesus got a drink from the Samaritan woman. And how would you like to have dinner in a Bedouin tent and visit the tomb of Abraham and Sarah? And I'll teach everyone to sling a stone like David in the Valley of Elah where he killed Goliath. And of course, no pilgrimage is complete without Mass at the tomb of Jesus in the Holy Sepulchre. Make the Bible come alive, Old Testament and